taking my production value up a notch.
The way of the future.
In the compound, bro. So, welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbog. With me is Skylar Neal, who, now, I wanted to have you on my podcast for several reasons. Number one, I need a podcast. You know, I need to keep putting them out. Number two, we had a very interesting time hanging out last night, right? We caught up.
Xander came through. And
yeah, Xander Forrest was around. And we kind of, he was like, hey, you know, let's, now I love Xander. You know, he's a hilarious comic, so funny, such a sweet guy. But he's a lot like a comic I also used to know called John Rowe. They both have a lot of things in common. You know, John was not a very practical person.
They both shoot from the hip style. Like, they never...
They don't plan ahead.
Yeah, they barely write. They just know what they're going to say.
They just do the stand-up.
Yeah, they're just going to...
Every single night. So it's not... They're not writing. They're just doing their act and then changing things. And then sometimes, like, Xander and John would, like, miss a punchline, then I would be like, oh, well, I heard him do that joke before, only he forgot to say this, you know what I mean? I don't know, man. They're just, there's a weird thing with stand-up, because some of stand-up is, like, in the moment, you know? It's, and some people actually just live in the moment all the time. And what I mean by that is they plan zero with their finances. They plan zero with their meal preparations.
It carries over. They like the way they both came to LA was pretty similar. I just got a text from both the same way too through Facebook, and then they're just like,
"They're like,
yo,
hey,
I'm on the way." I'm like, pretty much, "What are you doing?" And, I'm gonna come through.
Yeah. Well, you're, and I was telling you this before. This is you. You have a metaphysical checkpoint. You have a checkpoint of for wayward comedians. You know, we're in this crazy self-sustained van in an undisclosed location somewhere in Los Angeles that parks its way around, and you're kind of living like a shadow life, you know, you've melded everything down to this, you own everything outright, you're very prudent with your finances. But I think you also...
I'd like to be the one to disclose that.
Oh, okay, sorry, no, sorry.
I'm kidding.
Wait a minute.
What up?
We're not even fucking recording.
Oh,
I'm
shit.
So stupid.
No, that's cool, because...
Oh! No card. Saying no card! I hit the button. Maybe I have to format this card.
I'm gonna lower the volume of this guy.
Yeah, always good to have a backup.
I know. Maybe I'll just grab the audio off that thing. Yeah, man, this fucking sucks, man. Technical difficulties. Eh, fuck it. Well, I'll just get the audio off that. The audio is gonna sound different, ladies and gentlemen. We're not on my intro today. Okay. Well done. Okay, so. Yeah, they're both very similar, but. It's funny that we're talking about Xander because he's not here, because I just saw him 24 hours ago at this exact location, and I was telling him all the same stuff, but it's like, you know, he also like always needs a girlfriend, you know, he just went from girlfriend to girlfriend to girlfriend to kind of feel, he likes people around him to get energy, you know what I mean?
He's a very social creature. I think that's like super important, that's like style. I think that's good for a lot of people, like, but there's something to be said about solitude, being by yourself, or on your own, and not so much by yourself, because you can still, like, socialize with people, but, like, there's something about being your own person that I think is undervalued. Some people don't get it.
Like that quiet sets into you, so you can actually have a moment to like think about, oh wait, I'm reacting like this because this is happening. I'm reacting. Yeah, when you don't have that quiet, I mean, you're just like, oh, this is the next thing, this is the next thing, then it's a little bit addicted to distractions, is another way to put that. My friend Devin Murphy came up with that example, that saying, label being addicted to distractions, which I think is really similar.
I feel like a lot of my life earlier, when I was like, first into adulthood, was a lot of reaction. Like, I was pretty much just motivated off of reacting to what was going on around me. I had girlfriends, and I'd be like responding to her wants and needs. I'd have a job, I'd be responding to when I have to be at what time, I'd be responding to school. Like, oh, I have to take this class, and this class, and this teacher wants me to do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And I was just like going through, I was like navigating like a cat through a obstacle course, or maybe a dog through an obstacle course, and then being by yourself for a while is like solitude lets you like see what you want to do, see a different direction. I think that's the important thing that my recent kind of lifestyle has given me.
How long have you been living self-sustaining situation here?
For over a year, since I graduated college, and that was slightly over a year ago, and I've been in Los Angeles now for since like January.
And so you just go from mic to mic to mic. It's like the show Crashing, you know, the show is all about Pete Holmes. He's going, he's crashing on people's couches, he's trying to put stage time together, you know, his lifestyle is zero because he's got this dream. You know, you're mobile, bro.
Yeah, I have Netflix, but I haven't seen Crashing because I don't have HBO, and
I haven't really seen the show at all, but I'm just saying,
the spirit of that.
Exactly. There's something romantic about that Winnebago lifestyle. Like, no, this is what I'm doing. You know, there's a couple people like that. Elvis is out there. He's living that Winnebago lifestyle. I met you guys both in New Orleans, and now you're here. You know, Johnny Ansari is always traveling. He's on tour like 9 months out of the year. He's a savage, you know. It's just like, he doesn't get paid much, but he'll get $40 to gas to the next place and then live in a car, and he doesn't give a fuck, you know? It's interesting.
It's good before you have any responsibilities. I meet a lot of guys who are out here, and they'll have kids at home, like, not in LA, and be, like, at a mic, and it's just, like, it's really good when you don't have responsibilities, but
it's an interesting thing that you're saying, like, you know, college is put upon you, jobs is put upon you, and then if you go right out of getting a degree into having a family, it's like you never had a year or a fucking month where you went, woo, okay, I got peace for a little bit of time. What do I want to do in my life, you know? You're just reacting. The girl's like, well, you know, I need that ring, and blah, 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 and then blah, 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 and then the babies or whatever. Man, now, I think nowadays people are having, like, less kids than ever. Like, the workforce is dropping, you know? It's crazy, just because it's just such an expense, the time, the responsibility is going to drive you to the grave, you know?
Yeah, it's like, a kid, I think it's like the average kid's gonna cost like $1 million, over $1 million for each person, like throughout their lifetime. Like, is not just initially raising them, but once they get into college, that's gonna be crazy expensive. It goes up exponentially or whatever, and it's been like now like the average degree is like $400,000. I'm just pulling these numbers, but I'm just kind of.
And it guarantees you nothing. You know, you get a degree, it guarantees you nothing. Nothing. No job security in anything these days. So it's like, dude, something's got to change, you know. I've been arguing with my friend. Shout out to my friend David Boston, but we've been arguing about conspiracies, you know. I say that there's a conspiracy in everything, and he's like, nope, 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 everything's just mainstream science. He's figured everything out, you know. But it's like, I'm like, we're living in a Death Star. Bernie Sanders said that everyone's free college and healthcare would be like $205 billion for every American, free college, free healthcare. You might think $205 billion, that's a lot of money. They're spending $600 billion on the DOD. Then MLK, Martin Luther King, says, oh, well, the bombs are being dropped in Vietnam are actually being dropped in America's ghettos. And then the FBI fucking killed him because they're like, we don't want that message out there. He's disrupting our message of fuck yeah and killing them, getting their resources, you know? It's just, you're just playing, the whole military is just a sick game of controlling oil for these multinational corporations that have taken over the government since they fucking killed Kennedy and shit, man. Dude, it's so bad, dude.
To the internet.
Yeah, and just like trying to make it on TV.
Yeah.
The way to, the way that, like, to keep them from reaping what they're sowing is to just destroy whatever they build, and that the easiest way to do that is to buy a million tanks and then have them be obsolete next year, if not actually send them to war to be torn out.
Right.
Then we have this whole working class that's just a machine to produce these rations for military, and it's either destroyed by dropping them on people, or it's wasted by being obsolete and needing the next highest, newest, coolest.
Yeah, but, you know, there's this movie called Why We Fight, a documentary called Why We Fight, and you see this grandma, and she's, like, you know, sewing the top of a cap to a missile on, and she's just in the factory, next missile comes down, she screws on a cap, and she's like, you know, honestly, I wish I was building toys for children, but I guess this is my job. It's like, yeah, people don't want to be a mechanism of a death machine. But if they're spending $600 billion a year and you have to eat every day, you know, and there's going to be just a certain number of people. And, you know, sometimes, anyway.
It's hard for the average person to, like, quantify that. To them, it's just like, oh, I'm putting pegs into the side of an airship. It's going to be, it's not that big of a deal, but a small bit of something.
And just little pieces of mind control, just like ATMs all around. Like, oh, I can get these tickets, my fucking lunch tickets or taco tickets, out of this magic box with this card.
Boop, 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 boop.
And then the watchers, the elite, are just, well, they know you have no money because they already won the Monopoly game, right? And they would rather, if they're exposed, they would rather toss the whole thing and kill everybody and go in an underground bunker. I don't know. The elite are the elite class that should have gone obsolete. You know, there's still a British royal family, which is fucking ridiculous. I always think how racist
it is the idea of a royal class, because they're like, no, we have the most royal blood, so we're the, we get to have no job and get and manipulate everybody to do our bidding so that we can have tea and cake and zero stress and never do, never accomplish anything, never have to earn anything, and just this class of just complete sociopathic do-nothings have all the money. It's like, no, fuck them. Like,
it's like a holdover from earlier time. That stuff was just it wasn't even in the vocabulary to think of. Like, supremacy wasn't even a thing. It was just taken for granted. Like, there wasn't even, I'm sure there might have been, I doubt it, like, honestly, in British imperialism, say, 1700s, I don't think anybody said the phrase white supremacy. It was just, a given. It was just like, oh yeah, we're not civilized. There's just civilization. This is civilization. There is no other civilization. We're going to spread civilization.
I suppose we have to train the black man.
Exactly.
Yeah. They called it the white man's burden, that, oh, we have education.
Just
so
you can call
it
if you want
to. Oh. It only gave me 2 seconds of recording. I think this chip must be full. That's why it's getting my problems. Fucking A, dude. I hate technical difficulties. So annoying. Oh.
And then, worst case, we break out the shirt.
Oh. And go right to your computer. You have GarageBand or something that you can.
Yeah, I've reverbed. Into audio, engineering and shit.
I think James has to visit him a few times, and then he's like, I'm going to bring a friend this time, just kind of also meet you. But, dude, you should get into these Max Spears fans, because they're fucking crazy.
Try new stuff.
Yeah, you'll learn about the Illuminati, dude. Test. Okay. Highway Diary continues. Maybe we should just kind of wrap this up because we've had quite a good podcast so far. Is there anything, any advice that you want to give people who are comics, or just advice again about the importance of autonomy, the importance of...
Yeah, life gets in the... biggest thing that I ever hear from anybody who I meet talks about how, why they, like, talks about their regrets and things, it's always like life gets in the way. But if you don't let life get in the way, if you just, if this is all you want, then if you want life to get in the way, don't have a life. That's my advice. That's what I chose. I chose the path of having a life and just doing this and just trying to do what I'm doing, and you'll find a life around it. Like, you'll meet people who are like family, like visiting Xander. Like, I was like a homecoming of a brother or whatever. Like, he headed out last night. Me and Eric were trying to get him to stay a little bit longer, partly mine was
there's no living in dirt. Well, you know what I mean? And then this Western civilization has just turned into such an animal, you know? I was just at the University of New Orleans the last 3 years, and what's so annoying to me and continues to be is that I worked full-time all through college. I was barely scraping by. I had to pay my rent, my car note, you know, and all this shit, and the students that came from Italy or Germany or Dubai, the government took care of their tuition or a large portion of it, and they were like, oh, so this weekend after we do our homework, we should go to the discotheque down on Bourbon Street, down, and they just had money just to go down, like, it's fucking normal. Or they'd rent a car and be like, we're going to Florida, make the parties, and come back to New Orleans and take the final exams. And because they didn't have to work, because it's like they were normally taken care of. Like, don't you want, like, smart people in your society? Isn't that an investment? If your, you know, if your education system makes sense, then it should train people to be productive, and then they have a spot, and then they can produce a good life. But here it's just like you get the same degree after spending $400,000 on it, and you're waiting in a waiting room, you know, and they call you and you're the, you know, I've been to interviews at a college, but continuously, where there's like 80 people for like one spot, and when you go to interview after interview, you're like, what the fuck is going on? You know,
the pretty much just keeps you like a bachelor's works. And it just gives you an edge for working retail, like, to being a little bit, or to be a low-level manager of retail stores.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this one can read and write. Do you know how many tents there are down on 6th Street?
Oh, yeah, I was over there.
Down in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I was over in the Seafood District. There are a lot of raves that go over there, and, like, the... not abandoned buildings, but abandoned parts of buildings. And I went over there for like a week, and I was just chilling there. Yeah, it's just like legit.
Tent cities.
Yeah, cities. It's nonstop. It's just one tent that goes into another.
Yeah, they're primarily under bridges, but just. And it's like, okay, is anyone looking around going, no. This is broken. You know, it's weird that there's abandoned buildings in abandoned houses that have been foreclosed, but there's still homeless people. There's no program to be like, oh, well, these are foreclosed houses. We can't find a buyer. Okay, let's set up some group homes with some counselors, plenty of trained people with plenty of degrees out there who need a fucking job and a place to live, too, who would, you know, there's just basic programs that are just not being done.
It's not profitable to cater to people without any money, so those with capital, like buildings and housing things like that aren't interesting. That's why they're just they're non-existent. They're literally invisible. You'll look over the Seafood District and you'll see like a Tesla Model S. You'll see I was there 2 months ago, and there was just like these like at least over like $60,000 cars, if not $100,000 cars, that are just parked right on the side of the street, where it's impossible to park on the side of the street without being parked right on some dude's tent.
It's that income disparity is what makes people go crazy. They go, okay, so let me understand this. You're a cousin of the British royal family. You have a Tesla, because you have perfect blood and perfect royal com or whatever. You know, I'm a hardworking American who fought a war. I come out, they gave me the GI Bill, so I had things, but I was kind of fucked up, and it was hard for me to hold up down the job. Now I'm in a tent city. It's like, dude, this is this country, man.
And it almost seems like a hyperbole being like, I'm a cousin of whatever, because that guy might not be literally a cousin of royal family, but it is true that like we were talking college, it's really only available to relatives, distant relatives, those who every generation, few people do cross into middle class, and that's great, and some people fall, but the mass of the, that's an exception. The average is, we keep, college is just another like, gateway, like, it's another way to, it's a more appropriate way to say, you are not qualified for this job, because they can't say, you're not qualified for this job, because takes loans if someone from a lower class goes through and takes out all the loans that they need to get through, and they do get into it, then they're indentured servant to the throughout the next 20 years or a little longer than that.
And then it's like, oh, God forbid you want to do something normal, like have a wife and have a family. It's like, oh, God, then, you know, you're not a good slave anymore because your wife had a miscarriage and then she got cancer. And then it's like, okay, you're on your ass and you're living in a tent 2 weeks. It's too much, man. It's too much. You know, I remember just being an exchange student to Germany. You look around and the girls were cool and were like, hey, and they're like, yeah, it's kind of impossible. I just love German people. But, the girls are so ridiculous. But anyway, yeah. They're nice and they're not in, like, fight or flight mode. I feel like, you know, American girls, it's like the Hunger Games. It's like, oh, do you have this job? Because I'm behind on rent. My car loan, you know, I got student loans. I'm working 4 jobs. It's just like, you know, you go into a situation and everyone's financially traumatized. You know, people have skipped meals around or they've, you know, just normal people. I don't know. And then there are those who walk in the face of all of that and just say, I don't like this. I'm not going to play it. And they're refreshing in some sense because they pretend that none of the system bothers them. But
that's one way to approach it. That's kind of my school of thought recently. It's just like there's this whole complex inner workings of like of society and hierarchies, tons of hierarchy. I think that's a better way to put it. There's a complex system of hierarchies and to just step outside of that, and then it doesn't control you anymore. And if you look at your life as the next meal is of value, and the next small thing, or like the bare necessities or something, that's a jumble book, say.
Very wise tool.
Exactly, and that's now you've just stepped out of the game, like, and you'll always be bogged down because you always have to worry about housing and rent and stuff, but there are other alternatives to where you're not doing. But the second that, just like the internet, majority of people, or not so much a majority, but enough people, say did something like this and sidestepped out of society, they'd say, well, they take notice and then they'd tax them, commercially tax them.
So you're saying, like, if there were enough people who had Winnebagos and would park in different places, that the elite would go, how can we insert a taxation upon this and make our irrelevant selves relevant?
And
I'm not going to work.
Yeah, it's like, it's rent collecting. That's the term that's used now.
Well, just registering your car. You know, I went to register my car just to get the license plate, the fucking sticker that goes on it. It's like $310 when I landed in California for a driver's license, license plate, and a sticker. $310, bro. It's like, huh? I just had to pay a security deposit on an apartment. I'm starting out here. The fucking DMV knocks you out for $310. Everybody, all these fucking ridiculous institutions.
It's the registration is half of it, and then the insurance, the fact that you're required by law that, like, Imperial Guard can stop you and arrest you if you don't have a little piece of paper in case you hit that dude's Tesla. If I got into an actual accident, like, I don't understand it as well, so if I bump some guy's Honda Civic or Toyota or whatever, we just talk about it, and then we get. But if we got into an actual accident with two community members working with it, it's the guy with, like, the Porsche Cayenne, and say he hits you, you hit him, an accident happens, then it's not just the value of fiberglass being that considered. like,
they're making everybody, by driving a ridiculous Rolls Royce Phantom, you're also burdening every car around you with, if you touch this, you have to pay for it.
And just even...
And I've made the most cumbersome and fucking expensive, ridiculous decision ever, risking everybody around me financially.
And not just risking, if we have, just by them existing there with their, ridiculous brand of car that has literally the same engines from the same factories, the same chassis. Bentley Continental is the same chassis as a Volkswagen Volkswagen. It's like, it's just their prestigious brands, and just by them existing there, it raises our insurance.
Yeah, rich people, you know. And it's like, and when you buy something like that, it's just to say, I've not done anything. I don't have a personality. I'm a British royal family. I have, like, basically a St. Bernard's brain. But I'm better than you. Look at this. Look at this. Look at my capes. Look as I enter and exit this phantom. It's like, nobody cares except that person. It's just like,
it definitely comes from insecurity.
And yeah.
Like, a lot of those two guys are, they just, like, grow up and or don't really ever grow up. And they just feel like they need status symbols to identify themselves. Like, people who aren't exceptionally obnoxiously rich and stuff. Do that as well. Like, whenever I'm on snow funky socks, I'm like trying to differentiate myself from snowman socks. Like, hey, I'm quirky.
Right.
Yeah, but it just becomes a little bit when it's like ostentatious to the thing that separates me with my snowman socks and a girl with a wacky thing of blue hair there to differentiate herself from somebody with that. He comes from a place of especially on the street, like to be so vulgar on the street. It's like walking down the street with a bunch of blood down in this room. It's just like, it's like a statement. It's like a hostile statement.
Yeah. I got so many sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly.
That I can put sandwich money into, like, a fucking bald eagle scalp necklace.
That's exactly it.
It's like, what? Oh, you don't have any sandwiches? I got so many sandwiches. I'm just buying retarded extra shit. It's hostile. I think Louis C.K. has this joke where he's like, he has an Infinity, he bought an Infinity car, and he's like, it's evil. Like, every day I don't sell it for 60 grand, buy a 15 grand Honda, that would be fine. It would be fine. And then give that 45 grand to the homeless. It's evil. Every day. Which is so interesting. It's like, it's so easy for you to translate that into something that would matter versus the level of your car.
Yeah.
So that they break down anyway, all the same. So, what level?
And helping the homeless is also a super complex issue, too.
Yeah.
It's like, a lot of people get into things that like drugs or certain drugs that are just monkeys on their back and change their minds. Like, if you do enough heroin, if you Irish dune in the Seafood District for an attempt is, was born with more options than being there, and maybe the average dude took some paths.
Yeah, but I don't even know if all those people in tents, like, chose heroin. It's like, it's too easy to say, oh, well, they're drug addicts, so then their life took this direction. It's like, there's a lot of people who may have just ended up homeless because they got laid off in Bear Stearns. And then printed out 700,000 resumes and got zero returns. Like, it's also possible that just, like, the system is like, totally fucked.
I agree that. And then, yeah, I think it's just, lots of... being just the human condition is so common. It's like the brain or something. There's definitely ways to map it out. You can see patterns. You can be like, yeah, the system's fucked. But there can never really just any depiction an MRI scan of the brain. That's literally like a cartoon caricature of your brain. Like, you're experiencing. Like if you were thinking of whatever you're thinking about. Scan you, we'd see colors on an X-ray. We'd see like a human, but it'd be like a cartoon caricature of what like the analysts in the mind inside here in that moment. And like that's kind of what human society is. It's just like definitely the system's rigged and fucked. There's so many things, especially on the individual.
I'm so into this idea recently that money is a mind control device. The whole thing is ridiculous. That it's so weird. I remember one time I had to make a tuition payment at the University of New Orleans. Like my first 2 years, because I had some scholarships and stuff like this, I didn't have to pay a dime upfront for tuition to go to school. But I had to pay like $1,200 as like a minimum payment of like cash to keep going for my third year, my last year of grad school, and I just remember like thinking like taking this money out. Actually, I got it from bail money. I got bailed out of jail.
Well, I've
told this story a million times on my podcast, but I went to jail in New Orleans because a meter maid mistook a staple gun. I was putting up posters for a comedy show. She thought my staple gun was a handgun, and I ended up in jail. I had to give $1,000 bail. So I got that bail money back out, and I gave it right to my tuition payment. I just remember thinking, like, this is so fucking ridiculous. This hold me in jail money is now my tuition money and could be sandwich money, and it's all the same unit. It's like there should be like a unit of currency for like college and a unit of currency for food. It's weird that it's like the same thing. It's like, wait, I can either have a sandwich or a book. It just seems like, you know what I mean? And just the fact that everything is the same thing, it's like, no, if you want to read enough, you got to eat less if you're on a certain income bracket. It's like
those apps online are usually those little games that people play on their phone. There's two currencies, or one currency. One is in-game currency, and then there's like, and that's always like yellow and gold or something. And then there's always some blue currency that you pay real dollars for, and that's for like premium things that you don't need. Like maybe an interesting idea for all the things that that's really food and necessities for life. Some of the things were in yellow currency and all the stupid bullshit that people need for and don't have words for can be something that you can just pop out and feel like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be like a blue currency.
The only thing in our real society that's like that is like food stamps, I guess. Like food stamps are just like stuff that you can use at the grocery store just for food if you're on welfare. And it's interesting. So what do you think of the elite class now? And are they on the rise or are they on the run? And what's going on with Trump?
They're
what's
not
happening?
They're not growing in numbers, but they're
that they're concentrating now. So there's a few people that are like a trillionaire. They like won the game, and they're just looking around. Like, oh, is anybody gonna notice that we're getting away with this?
Yeah, they know that like everybody knows, but everybody was interested in knowing. She was doing it in like a condescending way, as if the idea was, this is a ridiculous thing, but it highlighted perfectly that it definitely was, he is a shill, because not so much how would you get the Verizon CEO, but you're that in bed with him, that you guys are just hanging out in a room together, and you're like, oh, let's just film this stupid thing. It was supposed to be a private dinner. That wasn't one of his many videos that he posted publicly to mock people. That was captured with the cell phone and posted in the back.
Oh, so they were like leaders. So our plan, anyway, to get the Surface Monkeys to lose their internet, their right to the internet. Now, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this is what net neutrality is. Like, if you're Joe Schmo with some kind of the Joe Schmo Show on YouTube or the JoeSchmoShow.com, right? Someone types in JoeSchmoShow.com, your website might not load, and the person might be like, because your bandwidth allowance is going to be so low. Now, if you go on ABC.com, boom, that bitch rockets right on.
Exactly.
That's net neutrality, is that Disney still owns, even though cable's dead, even though they have their, that's what their tendrils going into the internet was all about, was to squash the voice of the little man. When they could control the narrative of the country, the zeitgeist of the country, the psyche of the country, when people stop brainwashing themselves on cable TV, they go to the internet for answers because they want the truth.
They brainwash themselves on ridiculous videos on YouTube, but it's not the approved bullshit. That's how you get the spread of flat earthers. That's how you get the spread of all these, probably even white nationalists, all these people. You get the spread of really bad ideas, but you get a good spread of good ideas. But it's a freedom of, it's someone else isn't deciding.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, let me go to JoeSchmoShow.com because maybe he was in, you know, a laboratory and saw some weird shit that DARPA was doing. Like, no. If he's not, interviewed on ABC.com by Diane fucking Sawyer, it's not real.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem, you know, and I gotta give a lot of credit to people like Carrie Cass. capacity in Project Camelot. There's all these people who went around interviewing whistleblowers for no money. They were doing it as volunteers, and there's so many just beautiful things on YouTube that you can see of interviews. That's the beauty of the internet, is to get away from the centralization of these do-nothing monarchs who want to make residuals off the backs of the slave class. And no, we decided a while ago that we'd rather the internet. We want to search for exactly what we want to search for, and we don't need a tastemaker to tell us what to do, what to watch, you know.
Some things is in the evil agencies, the first time that they destroyed operating civilization, the royalty, the king's employees, the serfs that were just servants tied to the lands, I suppose, literally, and they were still tied to whatever land is, whatever bit of whatever scraps they give us, or they expect the, and a lot of people do, just because that's all
What's your plan? Your 10-year plan.
I'm not trying to change the world. I'm going to let the world, and I think the way to change the world is to lead by example, or is to participate. So yeah, I've just sidestepped all that, and don't really have a time-year plan, anything specific. It's just enjoy myself, have fun, feel life, experience, like, everything you can, see the most of all of the world, learn new skills, and just, like, get good at something, try to get better at, like little crafts here and there, like hobby, and music, and other stuff, and just, like, I've been learning some C-sharp coding and stuff. I showed you that, like,
You're learning how to, you're teaching yourself how to make video games. You're interesting. You're very autonomous, and you just really believe that you can just teach yourself anything with the internet. So you're just on the internet. That's all you really need in this little bunker, and you're just like learning.
It's just like it's really freeing, and like if you're at a job, if you're at like working hourly. Or even if you're salary or whatever, like, you're kind of in a situation where your self-esteem isn't valuable to an employer, and you're just worth stacking the cups, or you're worth this and that, or maybe even prestigious entry level job. No matter what you're doing, as in your early 20s. Graduated with a great degree from a prestigious university, wherever you go next, they're going to treat you going to grade you, just anybody that has power over you. It's just a funny thing about the human dynamic. Just that's one thing that it's nice to be free from. Self esteem kind of got me into trying new things and learning new things.
You know who had all the self-esteem in the world was John Rowe, you know? He was such a... keep talking about him just because, you know, you were the last person that I knew that saw him, you know? Do you mind talking about that a little bit? Because, you know, like I said, you take in Xander at a moment's notice, you took in John at a moment's notice, like you're this, like... kind of a beacon for a checkpoint.
Yeah, neither of those guys ever needed me. Like, if John or Xander, they would have came through and they would have done it just as great without me. But I was happy to, like, last night, I was happy to have Xander came and happy I got to see him. Stoked to have John with me and the other
you remember what happened, like, at the end there with John? You called DC and you sort of put word out that when he went missing.
Yeah.
And how long did he stay with you for a week?
No, he stayed with me for months. Since pretty much right after I got to Los Angeles, I was getting my footing and stuff and wasn't really sure what I was doing. And then I got a Facebook message from him. He was just like, hey, what are you doing? And that night, from like less than 6 or 8 hours, he was, from his first message from me on Facebook, he was just like, there.
Well, where did he stay with you from? In New Orleans, too, he was staying with you?
No, he came up here, he flew up.
Right. I drove him to the airport. Mm-hmm. And that was around February of 2017, right?
Yeah, he was great. He was just, like, exciting to be around every night we went out, which was every night, because of him. Like, he was, he had so much energy. Bigger, and he just wanted to be out at the clubs, and I'd be ready to go in, and he'd be like, "Oh, there's one more like cross. We'd just be chasing mics, and yeah. Sometimes they'd end up like not being mics. One time it would end up being like a random hip hop art installation. We just hung out there, and I thought we were gonna head back to the truck." He seemed like he knew everybody, like he's been there for like weeks. I would, it would be our first time at a club, and he'd introduce me to people, like he knew them for years, but he just met them a minute ago while we were separated, and everybody took to him, and he was just really, really great dude, not like completely separated.
It was nice then.
It's just a great note, and it's the world's cheated. And from losing him, it's just a sucks. It's just a sucky situation. But I'll always remember the next times. Places like my favorite night that we were out together. We stayed out like all night and we parked. So we were coming in from Lake LA and we parked, and there's this canyon and right in the middle of Beverly Hills. So there's freaking mansions all the way around, and then we get through the mansions, and then there's like this. There's just a canyon that I guess is like a nature walk, and our truck was in there, but there's no lights whatsoever, and we're freaking each other out by like talking about how there's probably sea cougars or sea like all kinds of stuff, and it was beautiful. It was so cool, but it was a beautiful night, like just this deep blue, felt like being on another planet full of Star Wars. Or something, like, it was just a really cool time together. It was the best night I've had in LA, period. Just comedy all evening, and then just like, walking through the canyon together. It was just the best. Christmas reward at the gift station. He said it's too soon. And I was like, no, but you have shown up. Or, you know, I think his phone was still on.
Yeah, he was like definitely for sure one of my best friends, like, in Orleans, like, period, you know, so. You know, I went to a funeral, too, in New Orleans, and his mom wasn't there just because she was so, like, fucked up because his brother died, like, 2 years before, so. I think that's what, I think John always had, like, survivor's guilt, you know, I think they may have been in a car accident together. I think he always had this feeling of that should have been me, it would have been me. And then I think he put a lot of the burden to succeed, like, right now. Like, he wanted to get in front of stand-up and go be famous, like, right now.
He had the big
Yeah, it's like, no, I don't, but I got a family to, I got another soul also on my shoulders to carry for, you know, to think for. So he didn't really care about anything except that. You know, another guy who reminds me of that mentality is just like Quincy Jones, you know. This guy I met in LA, he did 1,000 mics in a year, twice. Quincy Jones, he has an HBO special called Burning the Light, I think. Blowing the Light or something like that. But just going, it doesn't matter, the light's flashing. Special that you're not pulling the light, it seems special, you know? But, it was crazy because me and Xander Forrest had a fundraiser for John at Gumbo, and we raised something like, you know, we had the show and we raised like $400, but Dante gave us some money too because Dante Hale had a fundraiser show, so he dropped money on us, so Dante's and our money turned out to be like $450 or something like that. So I went and I made a cashier's check out to John's mom, Charlotte bro, so I had this cashier's check for like $450, and I drove all the way to Bretton Woods for his funeral, you know, and they were like, the funeral was so weird, because once we got to the plot, you know, maybe they didn't pay the funeral enough money for this. Like, they seemed pissed. They were like, and Corinthians 26 says, get the fuck out of here. Like, it was literally that fast when we got there. They were like, and all blessed be to the sheep. Okay, that concludes our service. We have another party is coming right now. We gotta leave because there's another one. And we were all just like, what? Like, the grounds, the people, yeah, the like, guy who owned the funeral place was also the preacher. He was like, and Corinthians says, fuck off. So we went, what? And then I had this massive, I'm like, okay, where's Charlotte? You know, where's Charlotte? And they're like, oh, she's not here, baby. Like, his aunts were like, she's not here, baby. You know, she's been in bed ever since. And we're like, okay, so what? And then we found his dad, so we all shook his hands. And a bunch of, a lot of people had a comedy shows for him, so we all, like, gave him money. But I'm sure that it was not comfortable. They had to fly out here and then find the body and all that shit. That's so fucked up, man. But I thought from the day that I dropped him off at the airport to when he died, I thought that span was only 8 days.
It was like 2 months. It was from January to April or something.
That's the thing is, when you come to L.A., it's not like only one person has this story, where they went to the Comedy Store in 1979, they did one set showcasing, and they got a manager and a sitcom all, and they were passed to the store with one set. Maybe it was two. Go here, do a set here. That's Roseanne Barr. In 1979, she got a sitcom, she got a manager, one night of doing two sets, okay? That will never happen again. The reality is, of living in, of making it in LA, is you have to live here and grind for 10 years to do, before you can have a conversation about getting a manager, getting any kind of exposure, getting this and getting that. So, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just the whole thing makes me sad. It makes me angry at the country. Like, even my girlfriends, when I was in LA, people were always asking me about John, which was annoying. But it was so weird. John was this weird guy where he was like there when I met both my girlfriends in New Orleans. Like, he was there during the breakups too. Like, I guess just because I went out and did stand up every night, he was always there. But yeah, he's just someone I will never, never forget. And it was just, you know, I didn't know when I first came to the New Orleans comedy scene, I wasn't, like, definitely making a bunch of friends. You know, I got banned from the Hi-Ho and all this shit. Well, making fun of the host. Andrew Cole was, I talked about it a thousand times, but he's a huge asshole. But anyway, I felt like I got banned from the Hi-Ho, and John and Kyle Smith, like, took me right in. Byron Broussard, you know, Thomas Jones. I was this little weird pariah of the scene, and John always made me feel welcome. He always was super nice to me, and just fucking sucks.
Yeah, that was,
when I first came out here, I was just like, you know, because I knew I dropped him at the airport in January 2017. I knew I was going to be here August 1st. So I was like, you know, when I dropped him off at the airport, I was like, all right, man, I'll see you in like 7 months or 8 months, you know. Did not make it.
You had plans of coming out here. What was your, before you got here and actually settled in and then figured out and reassessed what you were doing? Like, what was the plan of, when you were on the plane out here? What was, like, the plan?
Well, I drove. Yeah, I drove from New Orleans to L.A., but I, by way of Denver, because my sister lives there, so I stayed there for 3 days, and then I came back down and drove to L.A., but, I mean, the plan is still the same thing, and I'm close to it, and it was get settled, get a lit manager. You know, the stand-up scene here is so weird. The elite know we're talking about it. There's a helicopter.
The elite stand-up scene?
Yeah. The stand-up here scene is so weird in Los Angeles, you know. So many people have had, like, super legit TV credits, movie roles, and now they're out-of-work actors, but they have better credits than you. So, just, like, getting stage time is such a precious commodity, where there's an attentive audience there to watch you practice stand-up, or, to, you know what I mean, before you film your special or whatever. Just the art of stand-up and getting on stage and getting gigs and all that stuff is, like, really hard, because it's oversaturated with has-beens, up-and-comers, all the rest of it. So I almost feel like I got good with stand-up and I developed an act.
Yeah, I remember the It's been over a year since.
Thank you. I got decent stand-up. So now it's like I want to do stand-up. I want to perform the improv. All I want to do is tour the country doing stand-up. But even to do that, I want to sell screenplays so I have money so I can go out every night and not end up in a fucking tent, you know? And also, I think that it's a weird thing where if you rack up your reputation with screenwriting, then it translates very well to stand-up. It's like, oh, this guy's a writer. Wow, oh, maybe he'll let me in one of his movies. Hi. And all of a sudden you're meeting higher status people because they can help you. If you're just another palm, or if you're another comic with your hands up, Earl Scagle is this comic at the Comedy Store, and he's like, well, I'm sick of the Palmers. There's just these people, they're trying to get something off you, you know what I mean? There's this underclass of open micers that with their hands out in LA, and it's unappealing. So I want to go around and do stand up and have like something to offer a club or something to offer other comics. So, you know, that's where really screenwriting and trying to do that. But it all starts with get a lit agent, sell my fucking screenplays off, get financially stable so I'll never crash and burn, you know, with no place to live or no food, no fucking sandwich tickets, no bald eagle necklace tickets that come out of the ATM machine. Just want a level of stability so I can just do stand up.
There's a million ways to mountain tops and like different mountain tops for every person. Like mine is like I'm not interested in being in like somebody's movie or like some like I don't know what the like the average, but I see a lot of that like where people are like they have like a Dragon Ball Z like power level scanner of you when you're just like shooting the shit before or something and they're just like scanning you up and down and being like, what can I
talking about hipsters. Yeah, social mathematicians. That's the worst thing you can be in the world is going, what can this person do for me? But that's what happens in LA, you know? People are scanning you going, wait a minute, so they, you know, is he red? I will never say what the name of this comic, but I was outside of a comedy show, let's say in Louisiana somewhere, and I heard a girl say to another girl, yeah, he's funny. What's his deal? Does he have any money? I don't know what comic they were talking about. They were like, oh, he's funny, but what's his deal? Like, does he have any money? That was the craziest thing I've ever heard. Like, you're not even going, like, wait a minute, I think I like this person, but I'm not sure if I like them. Like, unless I know how much money they have, then I'll know if I like them or not. Like, that was what this sentence was.
I'm in a good place because as a nobody, like, I don't gotta worry about, or I don't gotta be hassled by those guys. I'd rather those guys, like, scan me and be like, this person has nothing for me, instead of them, like, scan me and be like, oh, I gotta freaking, like, I'd rather somebody just, like us, like, we met and we just had a genuine conversation, and, like, I was like, yeah, Eric's like, dude, and it's a year later, again, you're consistently a chill dude, and I'm not like trying to like jump on the screenplay or do whatever. I don't know what it's like. Like, right, I actually do know what it's like. I've seen it happen, but I haven't participated in that aspect of which is probably why like I'm not doing all the things I could be doing. But for me, I don't want to do that. I don't want to manage. Manager sounds, when I think of a manager, I think of at Wawa at a gas station. I think of
make more sandwiches. Come in early, you dumb cocksucker, and clean the toilet.
Yeah, you get that lit manager. He's gonna be like, make more sitcoms.
But I'd be like, okay, cool, get me a check, and we'll let's fucking talk, asshole.
That's what I was doing. That's literally what I told my manager.
I know, but if I can just get paid for doing that, like. That's what I'm saying. I just need, like, a couple checks up front to get balanced. It's, like, easy.
That's my,
that's all I want to do.
My, my friend, Joe, there's this kid, Joe Caulfield, who originally always was, like, a guitarist in bands and stuff, and now he, like, got some engineering degree, and, instead of, being guitarist, and now which what he originally wanted to do as a living. Now he, like, designs pedals, and I was talking to him, and he's like, the day with a guitar in your hands is, working with a guitar in your hands, like, still, like, it's better than any job in your mouth, so, like, for you, like, a day writing, yeah, is better than anything else.
Yeah. Is the battery about to go?
Not at all, man.
It's good. Okay. So we, I'm just worried that, you know, we'll lose the file.
Highway Diary continues. Maybe we should just kind of wrap this up because we've had quite a good podcast so far. Is there anything, any advice that you want to give people who are comics, or just advice again about the importance of autonomy, the importance of...
Yeah, life gets in the biggest thing that I ever hear from anybody who I meet that's talks about how why they like it talks about their regrets and things. It's always like life gets in the way, but if you don't let life get in the way, if you just if this is all you want, then if you don't want life to get in the way, don't have a life. That's my advice. That's what I chose. I chose the path of not having a life and just doing this and just trying to do what I'm doing, and you'll find a life around it. Like, you'll meet people who are like family, like visiting Xander, like that was like a homecoming of a brother or whatever. Like he headed out last night. Me and Eric were trying to get him to stay a little bit longer, and partly mine was, I wanted to, I just wanted to hang out a little bit more with him, and you meet like lots of people. Who
he's an interesting guy. He's a fun guy to be around.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, life, like you'd think that you wouldn't have experiences like family units and things, living with what you want to do, whether it's like comedy or whatever crazy weird thing you're into. If you're like a I don't know,
sword swallower, a vagabond magician,
exactly,
a juggler,
mm-hmm, a YouTube content creator or whatever it is, like just go for what you're doing full bore, because it's hard to do that while you're working a 9-to-5 and and you'll get all those aspects that you'd think you'd be missing out on. They'll find you. They'll like camaraderie and
yeah, like don't be afraid of like, oh, I'm not gonna have a family. I've always wanted to have a wife and a kid. No, your family's wherever you're at.
Yeah,
it's a mindset.
Exactly.
Like your mind, you could have a brother called Xander Forrest visit you, and
yeah, home is where the heart is, or something. Yeah, like, that's I think that rings really true.
Yeah, in my life. Control your own destiny. Don't be afraid. Don't follow the pre-scheduled path, because it's all bullshit anyway.
Yeah, and it's okay to be afraid. Like, it's okay to be afraid, but be brave. Like any chance that you get, like get up there and do. If it's stand up, then. There's lots of reasons why not to go out. You can be like, oh, I'm tired because of whatever, but it's like Finding Nemo, where you gotta rub against the anemones or else it's gonna sting you. Like, if you don't get up and just do anything, like it doesn't have to be new. You could go through your old thing, but you just gotta keep going out and you'll be better for it. Not just at whatever your art is, but you'll be better as a person who like follows through and sticks to things, and it'll carry over into lots of aspects of your life. And I think that's my advice. But who am I to give advice?
Well, you're a cool dude. You're a metaphysical checkpoint for wayward comedians. You're autonomous, and you've told the matrix of rule watchers the financial matrix, the elite, that you're not getting property taxes off me, bitch. I'm rolling on the highway in the wind. This has been another episode of the Highway Motherfucker Diary. Be good to each other. Be nice to each other. And if you see someone who needs a couch, let them stay over. Bye, motherfuckers.